Please be seated. Ezekiel wrote, "I was among the exiles by the river Chebar. The heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. As I looked, a stormy wind came out of the north, a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually. And in the middle of the fire, something like gleaming amber." In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Into every life a little rain must fall. Every cloud has a silver lining. When it rains, it pours. Clichés, I love them, don't you? Now the last one, who knows the origin of the last one? When it rains, it pours. Morton Salt, that's right. For those who don't know, it was an ad campaign. They wanted to articulate the fact that when it got humid out, their salt wouldn't clump, it would pour. But now, of course, we think of it in terms of what it means in life. When it rains, it pours. If one bad thing is going to happen, it feels like a whole lot of bad things are going to happen. But we resort to cliches like this because they're true, even if they make for bad literature and worse sermons. They capture the truth of our life experience. And as a consequence, there are a lot of cliches about storms because, well, for everyone, eventually life gets rough and stormy. So we find storm imagery throughout the Bible. Our readings this morning are just a few, and I'm going to give you a few more as we go along. I should introduce myself, though. Thank you for welcoming me. I am Christian Brady. I am a priest, as the getup shows you. But my 9-to-5 is I'm a professor of ancient Hebrew and Jewish literature at the University of Kentucky, and I am dean of the Lewis Honors College there. So that's what I'm doing most of the time, and I apologize. Y'all, I'm not going to lecture you for 50 minutes, but you're probably going to get a little bit more of the Hebrew Bible, Old Testament, than otherwise good for you, I suppose. But when I started out my academic career, it was in Jewish studies at Tulane University. And we spent 9 years there, our first 9 years back in the States after graduate school in England. And every year but one, we evacuated due to tropical storms and hurricane threats, including Katrina. And that one year we didn't evacuate, we should have, but we didn't know. It was our first year, nobody told us. Violent storms like that are the sorts of things you come to live with in Hurricane Alley. If you're out on the plains, you get used to the ideas of tornadoes, and you can run to the basement. But in New Orleans, there are no basements. And that's what scares me about hurricanes. Because you see, hurricanes have those sustained winds, but you can batten the hatches against that. You've got the rain and sometimes the rising water, but usually, short of levees breaking, you can predict where that water is going to be, and you can get to high ground or sandbag it out. But hurricanes spawn tornadoes, hundreds of tornadoes, and they scare me. You've got no place to go, no place to run. They can't be predicted. Tornadoes can't be predicted or defended against. You get a warning, and you just have to hunker down and wait for them to pass. Now, at this point, I suppose I should make some analogies between storms and our lives. You may have already done that yourself. We could end the sermon right here, but, you know, I got to do something to fill the time, don't I? In my own life, I might reflect and think about these 9 years in New Orleans and those storms. Every year, at least once, we evacuated. And, you know, it was this time when, in many ways, we were hunkering down and enduring the blowing and sustained winds. Because it was in this time that our children were born. It was in this time, though, as well, that we were also in pretty low-paying jobs. Yeah, you know, we kind of knew where to sandbag, how to keep out the rain and things. But low-paying job, two children, my wife Elizabeth and I both uncertain about what our future careers were going to be, whether this higher education thing would work out. And so it felt at times like we're just huddled in the bathroom, listening to the wind howling around the eaves of the house. Once we moved to Pennsylvania, where I went to Penn State, things seemed to be a bit better, and then out of the blue, tornado came and our son died of a blood infection. That tornado hit with the potential to destroy everything in our life. Certainly, it was devastating. But even in the midst of a storm, there can be peace. Now let's go back to Ezekiel. I open my sermon with this quote from right at the beginning. The prophet Ezekiel has this amazing vision of a storm. As I looked, a stormy wind came out of the north, a great cloud with brightness around it and fire flashing forth continually. And in the middle of the fire, something like gleaming amber. The prophet Ezekiel is living with the exiles, the other folks from Judah, whom the Babylonians, when they destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, picked up all the elites, all the prophets and priests and leadership, and they took them to Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq, to Babylon. And there they were, sat far from home. Their entire world had been disassembled. The only way they knew to worship God, right? The law says you offer the sacrifices daily. And the temple was gone. It was destroyed. Contemporary thought, theology, if you will, said, well, if one kingdom beat another kingdom, that meant that their God, Marduk, beat up on Yahweh, the God of the Jews. So their whole world had just crumbled and fallen apart, just wiped off the face of the planet. Can you imagine their despair? Can you extend the analogy to your own life? Have you been there? In that place where everything feels like has been taken away from you? Maybe everything has been taken away from you. And you just don't know if you can pray or worship. Or frankly, you don't even know that if you can, it will do any good. That's where Ezekiel and these exiles lived, in the middle of anxiety and defeat. And God sends them this vision of this storm coming out of the north, because it was out of the north that they came from Jerusalem. And here comes this big, massive cloud with lightning and fire and flashing thunder. And this is what he sees. This is the vision that he has. Now, I will tell you, I'm actually truncating it a lot because it's a really big passage. So a small favor, I know, but there you go. But in the middle of that exile, in the middle of their anxiety, depression, and defeat, he sees something in the storm like four creatures. And this was their appearance. They were of human form. Each had four faces, and each had four wings. Each moved straight ahead. And wherever the spirit would go, they went, without turning as they went. And as I looked at the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the earth beside the living creatures, one for each of the four of them. And their construction was something like a wheel within a wheel. And when they moved in any of the four directions without veering as they moved. And over the heads of the living creatures, there was something like a dome, shining like crystal, spread out over their heads. And there came a voice from above the dome over their heads. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. Can you see Ezekiel's vision in your mind? Do you recognize what he's describing? The gentleman who read for us is in it. He's on it. It's a wheelchair for God. It's a mobility scooter for God. That's what he just described. I'm not being flippant. I'm being sincere. It's got angels. I mean, that would be pretty cool, let's be honest, right? You have four angels riding around, But he's got these four angels, but they've got wheels, and it can go anywhere it wants, and the wheel within a wheel. Now, if you Google that on the internet, by the way, the whole Ezekiel's vision thing, first of all, set aside a couple hours. Don't believe anything you read, but you'll find that there are plenty of people who think Ezekiel saw a UFO. And there are some very high-quality 3D renderings of the UFO based upon these descriptions. It's really quite remarkable, actually. But that wheel within the wheel, doesn't that sound like a gyroscope? Like an ancient gyroscope. So this is cool. This is groovy. This is not drug-addled, though. This is a vision from God. This throne chariot what in Hebrew is called the Merkava, this throne chariot of God. What is the message of this vision? Why is this so important? Why is so much, this huge chapter one is just taken up with this? Well, there are two really important aspects, I think. The first is that God is there in the midst of the storm, in the midst of the tumult, in the midst of all of this, there is God. But the second is that there is God. Wherever you are, there is God. The Psalms talk about the temple being the footstool of God. Zion is his holy city. The temple is his dwelling place. And so when it was gone, they thought God was gone. When it was gone, they thought they had no way to communicate to God, no way to worship God, no way to show their obedience to God. And this vision says no. No. Yes, that was God's holy place. Yes, God was present with his people there. But now you, my people, are in exile. You're in distress. And I'm with you there too. Wherever you are, I am there. That's the message of Ezekiel's vision, coming out of the storm and in the storm. No matter where you are, geographically, financially, socially, emotionally, there is God with you. There are limited views being worshipped in the temple. So the temple was destroyed, and so was that mindset. And instead, and demolishing all of that, it led way to a more sure foundation. The realization there is nowhere that you can be that God is not. In many ways, we live in our own exile. We live knowing of, believing in the resurrection of Jesus, and yet we wait for our own. We live in a fallen and broken world that has shootings and homelessness, addiction and infections. But even here in this broken world, in the midst of the howling winds and pouring rains of life, God is there. Do you remember the story of Elijah? The prophet Elijah, he did everything God asked him to do. He did all sorts of things, including standing up against the king and the evil queen Jezebel, who were leading all of Israel to worship Baal. God told Elijah to take a stand, and Elijah took a stand. And as a result, Jezebel wanted him killed. After years of literally and metaphorically living through a drought, Jezebel sends out the word to kill Elijah, and Elijah runs away. He runs to Mount Horeb, to the mountain of God, and he goes up that mountain, and he says to Elijah, he crawls into a cave, I'm just done. I'm here to die. And God said to Elijah, go out and stand on the mountain, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now there was a great wind so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord, but the Lord wasn't in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, there was the sound of sheer silence. There came a voice to Elijah and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Elijah's honest with God. I did everything you told me to do. I was a good servant. And my life is falling apart around me. And you know Jezebel, right? Yeah. Well, she sent a lot of people to kill me. So I'm done, God. Be merciful. Take me now. Take me now. And God's response, Elijah, go. Return on your way. Be my prophet. Do what I've asked you to do. Go. Elijah wasn't let off the hook. God didn't take his life. He didn't take him up into heaven like Enoch. He said, no, I got more for you to do, brother. It's hard. It hurts. But go. Return, be on your way, and I will be with you. We have to be honest. It doesn't feel like God is there all the time. When we are in the midst of the storms of our life, we might feel alone. We might be alone. But you are not alone. God is always there. The trick is to listen, to hear God with us. Doesn't make it any less frightening. It doesn't make it easier. But he is right there with us in the boat. The disciples were in the midst of a real storm in our gospel today, a very real prospect of death. Jesus was with them, but he was sleeping. You get tired of all that preaching and healing. They had seen him do all sorts of miracles. But they knew this was it. No one can control the weather. So they went to Jesus. They woke him up shouting, Master, Master, we are perishing. I love that translation. That just seems a little too, we're perishing. I think it was something more like, we're going to die. Jesus woke up, rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased, and there was calm. And he turned to the disciples. I don't mean to turn to the choir necessarily, but it just works that way. And he said, where is your faith? My response would have been, we were dying, Jesus. We have faith in you, but there's water coming into our boat. The storms of our life rage all around us. And it will feel like we are alone, without recourse. And they're real. But so is the presence of God. We have to have faith and listen for the voice of God. Elijah heard God in the still silence. He went out into the wilderness. The natural world shook with the presence of God, but it was in the quietness that he heard God. But it's in the midst of the roiling storm that God comes on his throne chariot. God is everywhere. He's in the stillness and he's in the storm. In a crowded room, sometimes you have to shout to create the silence so that people can hear you. Sometimes there's a bit of shouting that goes on in our life before the stillness so that we can hear and understand God. God has been present for us, for Elizabeth and Izzy, my wife, my daughter, and I, even as we embraced one another in the winds howling round us after Mac died. But Jesus was present in the love of those who sent us just short little notes. It's almost 7 years ago that Mac died. And just this week, out of the blue, came a note from a friend. I hadn't heard from him in 9 or 10 years. It was a gracious gift that God sent. In those moments for us, in our grief, we could have given in to the voices shouting in our heads about doubt, fear, and failure. And there are some times we did. I'm not suggesting we are anything special. Sometimes you lose a job, you don't know what's next, you don't know what's around, you may not even know how you're going to feed yourself. Doubt, fear, failure, and yet God remains there with us, waiting for us, wanting to speak to us in the noise and in the silence, through our friends, through the events in our lives. Throughout it all, God is there. Hear God. Know that he is present in your life through faith. Where is your faith? If it is in Jesus Christ, then the presence of God will be with you, even in the midst of the biggest storms of your life. Believe in Him. Call on Him. And may the hope, the God of hope, fill us with all joy and peace in believing through the power of God.